Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. The coronavirus continues to dominate the national conversation in a way that no story really has in our lifetime. It is extraordinary in every aspect of American life, including political life. It seemed as if Congress was done for the year. We were in the middle of an election. If you imagine, can remember, about 2 months ago, we had an impeachment of the president. The president and the speaker weren't even talking to each other. And yet this week, in the midst of the coronavirus crisis, Congress passed the biggest piece of legislation it's ever passed before, a $2.2 trillion stimulus package with checks going to Americans, and passed it essentially unanimously. So what's in it, and how can it help you? We start off our conversation this week with Congresswoman Karen Bass, Democrat, chairman of the House, or the Congressional Black Caucus. Also this week, we talked with Carla Marinucci, one of the smartest people I know in California politics, about what's going on with Governor Gavin Newsom, who has this sort of biggest stage he's ever had, and California's relationship with the White House, which is changing because of the coronavirus. We end up with a conversation about the courts and the coronavirus with Gloria Allred, and just sort of an update on where one of our most frequent guests and favorite panelists, how she's coping with all of this. We do all of our interviews via Zoom this week because people don't want to come here and we don't want them to come in the building. It's a different world, but it is great to be able to connect with people that you know and like and care about. And that's certainly the way I feel about all of our guests. So let's begin with Congresswoman Karen Bass.
Congresswoman, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
So let's start with, for the average person that is now sitting at home, likely not
yes.
making an income right now because of all of this, what is in this for them? How is this going to help them?
Well, first of all, I hope that everybody is at home, being safe, abiding by the guidelines. And so what it means literally is that if you filed your taxes and had a direct deposit, you will just get money put directly into your account. If you didn't have direct deposit, then it'll take you a little longer and you'll get a check in the mail, and the check should be out in the next couple of weeks. The idea of unemployment insurance, you know, I thought the idea of a check was great, but if you just lost your job, a check is going to pay for your bills for a couple of weeks, but you need an income. And so unemployment insurance enhanced, as you described, I think is going to be of major benefit to the American people. But we are so lucky because we live in Los Angeles and our mayor has provided great leadership, and he's going to do everything he can to make sure he accesses all of the federal money, because there's other ways that there are supports in this bill. For example, enhancing Section 8, preventing foreclosures if you have a Fannie or a Freddie mortgage. There is testing that will be free, food stamps, childcare. There's a lot of resources that were provided for in this bill. It did just pass, and I imagine that it will be signed by the president immediately.
So, you know, there are a lot of Californians that make over $100,000, but right now are making nothing because the cost of
right.
living in California is so much higher than it is other parts of the country. What does this do for them? And is this enough?
Well, it is absolutely not enough. I mean, what we did now was we pulled a bill together over in the Senate, had a lot of input from the House and from Democrats, but we had to do something right away. So you better believe that we're already thinking about and planning about a fourth bill. So for people that make over $100,000, there will be no direct payment, as you mentioned. Believe me, I know how expensive the cost of living is here in Los Angeles and in California. So it definitely should be higher. And that's something that I hope we look to do the next time. But, you know, a lot of people in California work for different industries, the gig economy or the entertainment industry, and their work is, you know, temporary and sporadic. And so there is the opportunity to get the enhanced unemployment insurance. But also, if you're self-employed, you can apply for a small business loan that, if you have employees and you don't lay off anyone, that business loan converts into a grant. And so in this massive 800-page bill, believe me, we're combing through it now to see what all of the benefits are. Now, the next step of it, of course, after the president has signed it, it's going to take a while for it to be implemented. But I know in the city that the mayor is already on top of making sure that Los Angeles gets the money that we deserve.
You know, you've been in government a long time now between Congress and your service for the state of California. Have you ever seen a moment of this much need?
Well, let me just tell you that to me, the journey we're on now reminds me so much of 9/11 and 2008. The difference is that they happened at the same time. So when I was in Sacramento, especially my last 2 years when I was in charge, yes, when we had the downturn in 2008, where we didn't know where the income, the revenue for the state was going to come from, and the revenues kept dropping on a daily basis. So this part of it feels very, very familiar to me. But you are absolutely right. Historically, for example, we have never in the history of the United States had this many people unemployed at the same time. So in 2008, in 1 week, over 600,000 people applied for unemployment. 600,000. Last week, 3 million people applied. So this is a massive number, and it was something that happened suddenly. So there hasn't been anything exactly like this, but the economic devastation absolutely reminds me of 2008.
It's a sad sign when one of the only places that might be a growth industry is working in the unemployment office because so many people have to apply for that.
Yes.
Let's talk for a moment about the president's response to this. What do you make of how he's handling this crisis?
Well, I mean, I think he has been consistent over the last 3.5 years. And I think that the very sad thing that's happening now is that this is probably the only crisis he's had in his time that he didn't create the actual crisis. But he has mishandled it from the beginning, that left our country unprepared. It is shameful that the world's largest economy now has the largest numbers of people infected with COVID-19. This could have been prevented in terms of the large numbers. I'm not saying the virus could have been prevented, but he had the infrastructure in place to know this was happening. He was well warned. And to this day, and this is the thing that's really scary, he still doesn't seem to get the severity of it. The idea that he's going to decide county by county which county is at risk is absolutely ludicrous. And the idea, too, that our states are literally competing against each other for equipment because there is no federal coordination. So you have our governor bidding for equipment respirators against the governor of Illinois or the governor of New York. They shouldn't be in competition with each other. The president said last night that he doesn't believe there's a need for as many respirators as the governor of New York has called for. He has consistently rejected science and rejected advice. This time, however, his inability to see beyond his own self-interest really has impacted people's lives and has led to people dying. One week ago, there were 8,000 cases in the United States. Today, there's over 88,000 cases, tenfold increase in 7 days.
That really is amazing if you think about it. Another thing that you've been pushing for is some protections for people living in poverty here in California.
Right.
You have said that what we're doing as a state, a Democratic state, is not enough. What do you want to see be done?
Right. Well, I think that California is doing all that California can. California needs additional resources from the federal government. So, and those resources in part are coming, but again, they're not enough. So for example, we provided money for SNAP, formerly called food stamps. We need to provide a much higher increase. We provided money for community service block grants and community development block grants. That's two categories of money that cities and counties can use in a flexible way to provide the services that are needed. And so in our city, you know, we are overwhelmed with the homeless issue. It is the number one issue in our area. And so we provided $4 billion nationally for homelessness. Now, you know, we need much more than that in the LA area in California. So we need to go back and provide more money for homelessness. But California, we are fortunate that we have had the reserves, but now, unfortunately, you know, the governor and the legislature is having to dip into, and hopefully not, but they might have to exhaust the reserves, which then means it would lead to cuts. And I certainly hope that doesn't happen. But in order for that not to happen, California needs help from Washington. I don't think there's anything more California can do without federal help.
Do you think that the homeless people should be forced off the streets into other shelters or other places? Because when you look at a place like Skid Row, you don't see a lot of social distancing these days.
I know, but you know what? It would be worse if you compacted people. And so I think that the policies, as I understand them out of the city council, that they are trying to keep people, you know, clean the areas where people are, but not disperse them or try to congregate them. Actually, one of the things that I was pushing for in the federal bill that didn't make it this time, but I'm going to push again, and that's people who are incarcerated, people who are in any kind of institutional setting are at the greatest risk. And what we didn't provide in this bill was we didn't require federal prisons to test all of the inmates. And I think the testing should happen like that in the county and the state level. But again, one of the problems in our country has been we do not have enough testing, something that completely was an unnecessary problem to have happened.
And one last question just about you. As a member of Congress, you're used to having an incredibly busy schedule full of a lot of travel and a lot of events. It seems like most of that has stopped. What's life like for you? And are you doing anything for fun, any binge watching or anything to fill up the time?
Absolutely doing some binge watching. But let me just tell you that I have not had a moment. Because we have been, I mean, it's true, I'm not traveling. As a matter of fact, I'm here now while my colleagues are voting in D.C. because they didn't need all of us to go back. But I have been on the phone for 8-10 hours a day preparing for the stimulus package that was just voted on, you know, today. So I have been extremely busy. Things have just changed. We're all learning how to adjust to this new environment. And so learning what Zoom is
right.
and learning how to have meetings on the telephone or on video conferencing. But my workload has not lightened up a bit.
And what's your favorite binge watching show?
Well, I had a great show on Netflix called Madam C.J. Walker, talking about the first female millionaire in the United States who happened to have been an enslaved woman. She was enslaved when she was a child, and that's a great show. Watch that.
There you go. All right. Thank you very much, Congresswoman. Joining us now via Zoom to talk about all that from Oakland, the home of KTVU, our affiliate station, is the top political reporter in the state of California, as far as I'm concerned. Carla Marinucci writes the California Politico Playbook every day. If you're interested in this stuff at all, sign up for it right now. It can be emailed to you every day for free. Carla, good to see you, and thank you for the daily guidance.
Good to be here. Good to be here, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's talk for a moment about Governor Newsom. Both of us are involved in these briefings that he's doing with the media, trying to get our questions answered. This is really the biggest stage that he's ever been on by far, the biggest test for him. How do you think that he's doing? What do you make of this moment for him?
You know, I think for sure the governors are leading the way in this crisis. On the West Coast, Gavin Newsom. On the East Coast, Andrew Cuomo. And social media has helped them do that. Gavin does regular Facebook Live events. It's very kind of information heavy, Silicon Valley kind of CEO approach that he takes to those Facebook Lives. Andrew Cuomo on the other coast has a whole different approach. It's kind of New York Italian, no BS, kind of sit down coffee with Cuomo kind of thing. In both cases, I think Newsom has really managed to shine. He is now, I think the Sacramento Bee today called him the president of California. He talks about the nation state and the importance of what's going on here. And I think all the way along, Newsom has kind of led the way on this coronavirus crisis. I mean, remember that he was one of the first to call for for shutdowns. He was the first to call for a total shutdown in the state for 65-year-olds in Santa Clara County. All those measures have helped suppress the coronavirus cases in California, and it has paid off. If you look at the latest stats, Alex, we've got 1/10 the number of cases of New York right now. That's an amazing statistic. We have fewer deaths than Louisiana in California. Louisiana with 1/10 the population of California. So, you know, Newsom has talked about what California can do. He has managed, in the past, he had a very contentious relationship with Donald Trump when we talked about wildfires and some of the other crises that right. California has faced. But on this one, he is showing an unusual level of cooperation and support for President Trump. He doesn't want to get into a fist fight with Trump. It looks like he's putting first and foremost California's needs and its medical needs in front of everything else. Maybe they'll get to the politics later, but I think that is a good move on his part.
And it was interesting, Carla, because you got an opportunity to ask the governor about the president this week, and he went out of his way not to say anything controversial. He didn't take your bait that you were clearly giving him at that moment. I was trying to ask the same question, by the way. I was in line, and you got to it first.
I think it's important. I mean, you know, the SACB today said he's giving an Oscar-worthy performance. I think that's a great way to put it in terms of just not going there, not being contentious, not going head-to-head with Trump. This is not the time to do that. I think he knows that. People are looking for reassurance. They're looking for leadership, and they're looking for information. And when you talk about his briefings, Alex, I mean, you know, the guy is a policy wonk. He loves numbers. And he gives people that every day in those Facebook Live briefings, more information than they probably want. But this is what Californians are looking for, are craving at this point. And I think that's a good move. Those are the questions up from us. That's great. But the public wants that information. And he's certainly delivering.
Yeah. If there was a Facebook status for the Trump Newsom relationship, it would be it's complicated. But maybe Newsom has figured out something which other people maybe have not figured out, which is if you want President Trump to help you, saying nice things about him seems to be a good strategy.
That is exactly right. And we saw that, you know, last night, Trump with his interview with Hannity just went off on the Michigan governor. He's gone off on other governors, the Washington state governor Inslee as well, at a time when they're facing real crisis in terms of trying to get medical equipment. Newsom has not taken that route. And I think, you know, there may be a lot of Democrats out there that wish he would. And Trump has been super critical, in fact, of Cuomo last night. That was another one. But the fact is, some of these governors are getting desperate for money, for help, and for those that medical equipment. Newsom has been able to procure things. We see the Navy ship, the Mercy, docking in Los Angeles today. He's going to be there greeting that. And that has another 1,000 beds, 12 operating rooms. That's the kind of deliverables that he's been able to procure. And I think that strategy is working for him right now.
Can you remember there's a presidential campaign that's going on right now? We talked about, all that we did for like a year, and now it seems like that was forever ago. Joe Biden is like hiding in an underground lair in Delaware, you know, not leaving the house. Bernie Sanders doing some online chats. But what do you make of the state of that presidential race, assuming that it will be Biden versus Trump? You know, how does this change up that race?
I who could have imagined this? Biden was on that trajectory after those wins in the primaries. He looked like he had, you know, just a clear path to go. And now this has really thrown him for a loop, I think. There he is in that underground bunker, as you mentioned. And really the messaging, everything about his campaign seems to have, you know, taken to a back seat. He is hurting right now, I think, because you can't look strong from an underground bunker. And he doesn't look sort of strong and decisive from there, I have to say. Sanders is trying to continue on. Insists he's going to be at a debate, which Biden has said, no, look, we're done with that. But the fact is, this campaign is still going on. I think, look, the Biden team has to worry. They have to keep him in an underground bunker, that he cannot be exposed to this virus. That would be a incredible challenge for his campaign, and maybe the end of his campaign if that happened. You're already watching on social media some people out there say with a draft Cuomo movement. Cuomo has filled this gap in terms of being, some people calling him the nation's governor. He is out there every day with a 8 a.m. Pacific time briefing and making himself known to all of the country. I think that's the, if anything, God forbid, if any of these candidates gets the virus, then who knows how this campaign would change. That's why they all have to protect themselves. Trump should be protecting himself more than he is, quite frankly.
Right.
He's up there giving briefings shoulder to shoulder with people every day, even as he preaches social distancing. So, I think the Democrats have to watch this going forward. Trump is saying he's going to have the national convention in August. I think the Democrats are not going to go there. We'll see how it develops. But I think that would raise the possibility of a reinvention or another cycle of this crisis. And I don't think anybody wants that.
And it's interesting, if you look at the betting markets now, Cuomo is ranking higher than Bernie Sanders in terms of the question of who will be the Democratic nominee for president, even though Andrew Cuomo has no delegates right now, which is interesting, a state of play. Carla, thank you so much. It's always great to see you, and it's great to have your perspective from Oakland. Thank you so much.
Always good to be with you.
And welcome back to The Issue Is. We're joined now via Zoom by perhaps the best-known attorney in the world and our most frequent guest on this show, Gloria Allred. Gloria, good to see you from home for the first time.
You too, Alex. And I am working from home. And thank you so much for inviting me onto your show.
Well, nothing, of course, can stop Gloria. But originally, you were scheduled to be on the show in studio. Now, of course, we're not doing any in-studio guests, to talk about the Harvey Weinstein story and his conviction. This week, we got news reports that Harvey Weinstein himself has tested positive for coronavirus. What went through your mind when you heard that?
Well, the first thing that went through my mind, as it always does, is my clients. Who are victims of Harvey Weinstein, because I was sitting in court in New York with my clients when the sentencing took place on March 11th, and Harvey Weinstein was close by because he was sitting at the counsel table. My clients were in the first row. I was sitting right behind them on the second row. And very close to the aisle. So I knew they would be concerned about whether he had coronavirus at that time, whether or not they might have been infected by him, so as well as having been victimized previously by him. And sure enough, there were concerns. So that was my concern. But I do think, and now, on reflection, it appears that he did test positive, but according to reports, did not show symptoms. And I think that he was far enough away that they're okay. And it appears that he doesn't have symptoms. Of course, he was sentenced to 23 years. I went out afterwards outside to the press and held up my sign that said, "This is what justice looks like. 20 plus 3 years, that is what justice looked like in the criminal justice system in New York. 20 of those years were for my client, Mimi Haley, who was a victim, and he was charged with criminal sexual assault, which is a violent crime, and he was convicted of that. He got 20 years for her and 3 years for another victim, Jessica, whom I do not represent. We know now that the Los Angeles County prosecutor is seeking to extradite to Los Angeles Mr. Weinstein. There are two victims for whom charges have been filed in Los Angeles. I represent one of those two victims, Lauren Marie Young, who was a witness in the New York case, but will be a victim witness in the Los Angeles case. So I'm actually putting a lot of time into this Los Angeles case in reference to, there are others also contacting me who have not previously contacted me in the past about Harvey Weinstein, and in the event that they are interested in speaking to law enforcement or knowing what their rights are in a civil case, I'm also providing that advice to them. Yeah. So even though he's in New York, even though he's tested positive for coronavirus, Alex, Mr. Weinstein is in a world of trouble because the criminal justice system is not finished with him, and he's going to have to face the prosecution in Los Angeles. Of course, everything is slowed down because of the coronavirus, and courts are essentially operating on a skeleton schedule here, as they are in New York and many other places. So we'll have to wait and see how long this extradition takes. But right. I do have confidence that the district attorney's office in Los Angeles is going to be ready to proceed when Mr. Weinstein gets here. He'll be arraigned.
Did you feel much sympathy for Harvey Weinstein when you heard that he had coronavirus?
You know, I don't frankly wish coronavirus on anyone, including Mr. Weinstein. You know, I don't have really don't have sympathy for Mr. Weinstein. He is where he is because of what he has done. You know, it's not easy to prove a case beyond a reasonable doubt. It takes a unanimous jury. And this jury was very thoughtful in its deliberations. And they did find him guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. So, you know, he's in prison. He's in Wendy prison in New York. That's where he belongs. And, you know, he's responsible for where he is, nobody else. And apparently, you know, the reports are that he contracted the coronavirus in Rikers Island. I can't confirm those reports because we have what we call HIPAA laws in the United States, which protect a patient's privacy. And that would include inmates' privacy in jails or in prison.
Right.
So I'm not and that's why there's no name of a source for these news reports about his condition. But all I can say is my sympathy, frankly, is reserved for the victims. My sympathy is reserved for everybody in the world who is concerned about contracting coronavirus or who does have coronavirus right now or whose family members or friends have it.
Let's talk more about the courts themselves. There's been a lot of attorneys concerned about their own safety going to courts, and there's been some concern about whether we should have jury trials at all in this period. What's your take on that?
Public safety, Alex, is first. And we cannot have jurors being endangered or feeling that they are endangered by going to court, nor can we have court personnel or attorneys or anyone else in the courtroom, you know, endangered by having, you know, hundreds, perhaps thousands of jurors going to court. So, no, we can't have jury trials during this time. We're not going to have jury trials during this time. Courts are still functioning, as I say, on basically a minimal basis. And so the jury trials will have to wait. I'm actually called for jury service. And I, of course, will show up at the appropriate time. But this is not the time for jury trials.
That'd be one hell of a foreman.
Yeah, I have actually, it's not my first time having been called for jury service in the past. I have, of course, shown up.
Have you ever served?
No, I have not served, yeah. but I've been excused for various reasons. Yeah. One time I was called for a murder trial in which a husband was accused of killing his wife.
Right.
I was excused because I had to go to Italy on a case in which I was involved there, where a husband was accused of killing the mother of his children.
So there you
go. I learned after that both sides would have accepted me and believed, both the defendant and the prosecutor, that I could be fair and impartial in this particular trial.
Let's talk for a moment. Another issue that's been we've seen in terms of the courts is a prisoner release, because a concern about the safety of nonviolent offenders who are behind bars right now. Do you believe that's a good idea?
Again, I mean, health and safety are paramount. Everything else is second. you know, there is a burden on the, you know, jail system for, you know, not only the correctional officers who work there, who are very brave and who hope, you know, are taking protective measures, but still, you know, the continued outbreaks or spread of coronavirus in jail is going to not only endanger other inmates and put a burden on the hospital system within the correctional facilities or jails, but also presents a safety risk, a health risk to the personnel there. So do I think they should be released? I think that if the health and safety can be improved by releasing nonviolent prisoners, which, by the way, Harvey Weinstein is a violent prisoner. So is Bill Cosby. He's a sexually violent predator classified that way. I think that that's a wise move, an appropriate move under the circumstance.
In addition to being an attorney, you also were a delegate to the Democratic convention last time. You're very involved in politics, talk about it on our show all the time. What do you make of President Trump's response to all this?
I think during this dangerous time, this frightening time, we need an unprecedented time for us and our generation. We do need trusted leadership. I don't think we have leadership the kind that we need from President Trump, and I don't think we can trust it. We have governors, including Republican governors, as you know, as well as Democratic governors, crying out from their states on social media, on television, on radio, in every form of communication, saying they are not getting what they need to help the people in their state. They are not getting enough respirators. They are not getting enough protective masks for our very brave doctors and nurses who are on the front lines of this crisis. They are not getting the hospital beds, the hospitals themselves that they need. They need help. We need help. And fantasies and aspirations and hopes that, oh, this will be over by Easter, so somehow we can all go to church or our houses of worship or back to work. It's not going to happen. We need someone who is going to pay attention to the science, to the data, and to what is happening in our communities. I'm so glad we have one of the United States Navy hospital ships now docked in the Los Angeles area and soon ready to take all of those who need hospital beds.
Right.
Leadership from the White House, not slogans, and the Wall Street will take care of itself. And the economics will, you know, will come back, but we need to put health first of all of us.
So everybody's life is a little different now because of coronavirus. Before, you're one of the busiest people on the planet. What's life like for you in quarantine?
Well, Alex, I've had to readjust my schedule because, as you know, I travel quite a bit. For example, I had a case that I was going to go back to a mediation in New York last Friday. And then I had a case in Washington, and I've had many cases all over the country. So what we've done, and many lawyers across the country have done this, is we are now doing mediations, which are settlements through the internet, but by secure, in secure manners. In other words, our mediators, who are retired judges or professional mediators, they create secure connections, and attorneys like me, plaintiff's attorneys, victims' rights attorneys, and opposing counsel, we can do mediations through the internet and instead of in person as we usually did. And we did one last Friday, for example, where my client was in Germany. The mediator and my co-counsels were in New York. I was here in Los Angeles, along with some of my partners. And we managed to do it all day. And we went from early in the morning till into the evening. And it was very, very successful. And we got a fabulous settlement for our client. I just got an email, and she is extremely happy with the result. And I'm a firm believer that we would not have been able to get one penny more if I were there in person. So we are conducting business, and I think this may be the wave of the future and the way to do it.
Yeah.
We're all very happy with that. I think lawyers across the country are going to be doing it as well if they've not already done so. I'm sitting here at home. So I'm now part of your kitchen cabinet because I'm in my kitchen. We'll call it Alex's kitchen cabinet. Yes. But I am working from early in the morning to late at night, talking with new individuals who would like us to represent them in cases. I am moving along the cases that we have. I am speaking to opposing counsel, to mediators.
Right.
We are moving our court cases along, even though some trials have to be delayed. I have clients, you know, not only in California, but all over the country. And as I say, certain parts of the world, beside Germany and France and Europe, in the UK, and working in different time zones. So everything actually is moving along very smoothly. People say, well, how does it feel to be alone? I don't feel that I am alone at all, even though I'm the only one in my house, because I'm constantly communicating with everybody. So I don't have to worry about the 6 feet distancing because nobody's here except for me. I'm here alone with my best friend. That's me.
All right. Well, let's talk, though, about give us something fun, because you're talking all about the work. A lot of people now binge watching something in particular. What are you binging? What are you doing for fun?
Well, I don't know if this is fun. I'm binge watching CNN and MSNBC and of course, Fox that you're on. That's pretty much it, because I'm just constantly working. I'm on my computer, but I do want to keep up to date with what's going on in the news and with the coronavirus.
Yeah.
And yeah. So that's it. I frankly haven't watched a good movie for a while. But maybe that'll be something that I'll do this weekend.
I'm looking
forward to your show tonight.
Thank you.
And the only thing I really miss is dancing with you in person.
Thank you so much for listening. Hopefully you're listening to this as you go out and go on a walk or something and enjoy some fresh air as we're all cooped up during this apocalyptic time. I'm Alex Michelson. Connect with me in social media. Let me know your thoughts at Alex Michelson in social media. Be great to hear from you. Stay safe, take a deep breath, and we'll see you next time on The Issuance.